Hello everybody, this is David Noble and Dalgetty Bay, and you're listening to Radio Edgy Talk, and tonight I'm delighted to welcome to the show once more David Cameron, independent consultant, and David's also a fifer, or I don't know, maybe an adopted fifer like myself, and also tonight, as ever, we've got John Johnson over in the West. So how are you guys this evening?
Well,
very well, thank you.
Okay, and what we're going to be doing tonight as we come towards the end of the school year, a time for reflection, although we're not reflecting on the year gone by, we're actually going to be looking back at an event that no doubt some listeners will have taken part in, a recent event, the Festival of Dangerous Ideas that David Cameron was heavily involved in organising and running on I think it was last week. So what we're going to do is just hear from David, looking back, reflecting on the event, and I suppose there'll be a particular interest in what he feels has actually come out off the week-long events, and indeed the week finished with that. I believe it was an emporium of dangerous ideas with a kind of marketplace. And no doubt some interesting things will have come out of there with regards to, you know, maybe what was gaining a weighting, what was gaining a popularity among the many participants. So we'll just get straight into it, if you don't mind, David. We're recording this late, so it won't be too long a programme this evening, and hopefully there'll be one or two people listening in live, and as ever, if you'd like to put a comment or a question to our guest, as I say, our guest this evening, David Cameron, then you can email the show at edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, if you just use the hashtag edutalk, edutalk, then we'll be able to pick these up live and put them to David himself. David, you've appeared on the show a couple of times before, but just for those listeners who aren't aware of your work within Scottish education, could you just give us a brief background and then go on to maybe introduce what was happening last week during this festival?
Okay, David. Very briefly, I was a teacher for years. I then went into the advisory service and then into the directorate. And my last proper paid job was director of children's services for Stirling Council. Since then, I've been working on my own for about the last 3 years now, doing a lot of work, a lot of training, a lot of work directly with schools, some CLD stuff, just a whole range of things. And latterly, interestingly, getting some work internationally, and got a lot of work in England. So I seem to be jack of all trades, and I'm not sure which ones I'm master of.
Okay, and maybe give us a flavour of what last week was all about then.
Well, last week was really exciting, and even as somebody directly involved in it, I thoroughly enjoyed the events of last week. We felt that it was time to fight fire with fire. There are so many dangerous ideas around in the establishment just now, particularly in England. The idea that you can improve education by being more threatening towards schools through Ofsted, through having a more condemnatory framework. And there are many dangerous ideas around in Scotland too. And we felt that it was time that we had some dangerous ideas that came from the ground up, if you like. So we set up the week, mainly through Karen Lawson at Scotland's colleges, with an introductory event at the National Museum of Scotland. And the idea was to try and get people thinking about things that had been dangerous ideas in the past and were now commonplace. And that worked really well. We had Graeme Donaldson, former chief inspector, not a man, not an organisation reputedly full of dangerous ideas, but he talked to us about the impact of the printing press and then the move to Web 2, and actually raised issues around deschooling and reschooling. We also had Ian White from government, who did a barnstorming performance on the dangerous ideas of what if we gave young people the education that they wanted rather than the one we thought they should get. Carol Craig was there talking about potential, and someone from the National Union of Students talking about the student voice. And that set the week off to a really good start. But in the remainder of the week, there were philosophy cafes, there were arguments, there were debates, there was a Pecha Kucha, which even I'm not sure what it was. There was an event in St. Modens about education as a marketplace. A fabulous night about Dangerous Theatre, David, which, of course, you attended and podcasted from.
Yeah.
And that was just an amazing night. Lots of really interesting ideas. Wonderful hosting from Paul from Visible Fictions, an organisation well worth looking into. But getting into the whole idea of, is there anything that's off limits in terms of young people's education? Are there any ideas we should never entertain? Are there things we should never use? And I found that really stimulating and exciting. And as you said, we rounded off the week with the Emporium of Dangerous Ideas. There were three winners. The winner of the open category was someone who put forward the dangerous idea that government should get out of education and education should effectively be run by trusts of professionals and learners. And that collected more dangerous dollars on the day than any other idea. We had an amazing time, and one of the most striking things was Cool Primary School from up near Fort William, I think. They have a room 13, which is where they have an artist in residence. And the artist runs a commercially viable operation, but the board of directors is largely made up of young people from the school. And a guy called Jordan McDonald, who I think was probably about primary six, primary seven, was the managing director. And just a stunningly confident, articulate young man, able to talk very clearly about Room 13, talked about its work in Cool Primary School, talked about the international applications, and just, I think, really blew people away with the overwhelming sense of somebody who knew exactly what they were doing, understood the ideas that they were talking about, held their own in adult company without any difficulty at all, and really posed some pretty dangerous challenges, I think, to many of the audience. But we had a huge range of things there, and the whole aim of the festival, as you know, was to shift the axis of the possible, to try and get people thinking that there are things that we might be able to do that we dismiss. I don't think the axis of the possible shot off to the left too far or too fast just quite yet, but I do think that the festival aroused interest. I think it touched a whole number of people. It brought in a range of people that I had never been engaged with before. Guerrilla gardeners, some of the theatre people were fabulous. Lots of people around in the voluntary sector who had ideas, who had a commitment to make, and they made me excited again about education. But more than that, I think they created an air of excitement, which certainly had an impact with Scotland's colleges. And in the meantime, I think the main outcome is there's going to be another one. And the focus of the other one will be much more on how we implement these dangerous ideas.
That's great. Thanks for that review, David. I mean, you were saying about how it's kind of made so many things come alive and rekindled your passion in education. But I'm wondering about whether any of your kind of fundamental views or the kind of the basis of your approach to education and working with educators in Scotland, whether that changed at all, either during the week or in the days since?
A number of things were very definitely reinforced. And one of the things that made me think about a great deal was the debate that we've had around the McCormick report on the idea of other people in classrooms. And we've kind of greeted that, I think, as a possible dilution of the teaching profession. But last week it began to feel like a real supplement. Last week it really began to feel as if there was huge mileage in taking a much more inclusive approach to the way we deal with children and young people. And the people who came along, whom I thought could work alongside teachers and schools, had the utmost respect for teachers. They really understood the professionalism of the teacher, really understood the role that educators played in brokering between the needs and abilities of young people and the demands of the curriculum and the demands of society more broadly. No effort, at all no thought of diluting that contribution that teachers made, but a real willingness to get alongside them, to try and do things differently, to try and help them to achieve the ambitions that they had for young people. So that was something that was very strongly reinforced for me. I suppose the other thing that it did bring home to me was how much education should be driven, how much learning should be driven by curiosity and engagement. And it made me think about how I would approach classes as a teacher, and setting out the rules at the start for what people couldn't do, and the implicit assumption that I was in a conflict zone rather than a learning zone. I needed to set the parameters. And it made me think that if I were to go back into the classroom, that one of the things I would want to do would be to frame these parameters around positives. So these weren't massive changes, but they were certainly significant reinforcement for ideas that I'd had. And I guess the final thing that last week did for me was it made me go back and think again about how to be more imaginative and more creative. I'm working tomorrow with a group of teachers in Perth and Kinross, and I'm doing some work with them around Stanley Mills, which is a historic industrial site. And whereas I think before last week I might have been thinking about themes and topics like the Victorians, like industrialisation, I'm now looking at how a site like that can make a significant contribution to understanding the world as it is and the world as it will be. And thinking about themes like childhood, what is childhood, which I think could be a really rich theme, allowing people to look at global contrasts, allowing them to look at historic contrasts, and allowing them to think very much from a child's point of view about who they are, what their life's like, what the stage of their life is like. So a number of these possibilities that came through. But next week, I'll be meeting again with Karen Lawson, and what we want to do then is to try and really pull together what last week might have brought and really think about how we might capitalise on it.
Hi, David. It's John Johnson here. Sounds fascinating.
Hi, John.
I didn't manage to hear very much of the show live. I was that time trying to record it, but a lot of other things going on. But listening to you there, it reminds me of a project Stephen Heppel, who was our guest on Edge Talk last week, runs called Be Very Afraid. And Be Very Afraid is a platform for children to show what they're doing, and the idea is that they should be frightening the teachers by their competency and skills and enthusiasm and all the rest of it. And a few years ago I was lucky enough to visit that, but you can also see various projects that are involved with it online. And these sort of, I'll say, learner-centred and learner-driven projects where children are given an awful lot of freedom to have creativity seem to me to be, you know, really powerful methods of practice. But I wonder a couple of things. One is that, you know the fact if you change anything in the classroom, it has a positive effect for a while. It's just that you change something, you do something new. But also with these sort of very learner-centric and, given a lot of the control and power over to the learners, how sustainable is that sort of thing in the long run, do you think? These dangerous ideas, how far can they go?
Well, I think that shift is part of the paradigm shift that we need to make, and it's the paradigm shift, if you like, we keep talking about. We talk about the move from teaching to learning. We talk about trying to create successful learners, confident individuals, all of the capacities around curriculum for excellence. And for these things to really have any meaning, there have to be opportunities for learning. And I think one of the other things that I'm constantly aware of these days is that we really do need to try and strengthen this whole idea of intrinsic motivation, of people gaining joy, gaining pleasure from the completion of a task or a challenge. I think we've got so caught up with the whole concept of extrinsic motivation, that people do something for something. And it culminates in the kind of situations that I encountered as a secondary teacher. Of youngsters saying, will this be in the test? Will this be an exam? And if not, you know, why are we doing it? And I think we need to move towards that idea of, as you say, learner-driven approaches, learner-centric approaches. Because these young people have opportunities to learn constantly. And we know that through the discussions we've had around the technology. We know it from the fact that youngsters come into school having done a phenomenal amount of learning before entering that formal context. And we need to build on that. Because ultimately, I keep using the same quotes, John, and apologise for it. But it's the learner who thrives in times of change. As Eric Hoffer says, times of change, the learner shall inherit the earth. The learned are only equipped for the world that used to exist. And we need to move towards these approaches. I think there are huge challenges because we need the confidence, we need the trust, we need a belief that it will work, and we need a move away from command and control. And we also need a move much more towards trust for teachers. Because I think teachers feel so under pressure to deliver standards, to meet targets and so on, that it really has a massive impact on how they deal with young people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that completely that teachers at the moment feel very much under pressure with the new curriculum coming in. And it seemed to promise at the start that it should solve that problem. But there almost seems to be more things to fill in, more things to cover than before. And I think that's a scary thing.
Well, and that's the trust issue, isn't it? That what we're seeing is we're seeing this perfect storm where we've got a significant number of teachers looking for more guidance, looking for more direction, effectively looking for more control. We've got, I think, sometimes local authorities who are extraordinarily nervous about really displaying confidence in their teachers. So they're continually seeking evidence that attainment is being improved, and consistently, I think, in a number of instances, trying to justify their own existence, far less that of the quality of their schools. And we have this sense around that HMIE are still working with an attainment agenda, which I suspect sometimes is a harsh judgment. But I think we've got that perfect storm, and it's getting us to the stage where, as many people are saying just now, the original vision and intent of Curriculum for Excellence is being lost. And loads of people now are reinventing the experiences and outcomes as the 5 to 14 attainment targets for at large. And I think the danger is that we're going to have an initiative which is possibly a change, certainly not a transformation, and as you say, actually adds to the workload and stress of teachers rather than liberating them from significant elements of the workload. You know, the question that has to be asked just now is, whatever happened to that whole concept of decluttering? Because I think for teachers on the ground, things, as you're suggesting, feel much more cluttered than ever.
David, it's David Noble again. I'm just interested to go back to last week's Festival of Dangerous Ideas. We're talking there about, you know, maybe much of the teaching profession feeling under certain pressure at the moment, and I'm wondering, you know, we're waiting for the National Partnership Group reports to be published this week in terms of looking at professional learning in the long run. So it's a tenuous link to the last week, and I'd just like to ask, you know, what was the kind of makeup over the week of people who were attending, and were there certain groups that you were surprised at the numbers who were taking part? And similarly, you know, can you comment on A, the number of teachers that were there, and B, how those numbers might be increased, or how the festival might better access the tens and tens of thousands that are, of teachers that are out there in Scotland?
I mean, I think the pattern of the week was interesting in terms of attendance. The night of Dangerous Theatre, I think there were more theatre people, education officer people based around drama groups. College people, I mean, you know, the festivals are rooted in Scotland logic. So lecturers and tutors were better represented than class teachers. The interesting bit was, despite that focus, we still did get class teachers coming in. And I suppose if we want to get more of that, then we probably need to make the festival a share between Scotland's colleges and other bodies. I thought what it did in a strange way, David, was to set a model for the Scottish Learning Festival. The event was done in a shoestring. It was done with a very, very small team. It had no additional funding. It had very little support from any other bodies this time round. It was pulled together on the basis of goodwill and enthusiasm, and yet it managed to display events in most geographical areas in Scotland. It managed to bring in people that you wouldn't normally see at any kind of educational event. It got in range of people that I wouldn't commonly see at events, and I think what I would like to see is some kind of blend around that. I love the idea that the Scottish Learning Festival might have a core event with the kind of marketplace that we currently have, and I suspect that that helps to make the Learning Festival economically viable, but there should be far more guerrilla and fringe events around it. Should be far more scope for people to brand things as part of that learning festival and get more teachers engaged with it. And the other comment I think I would want to make is that we're treading a fine line just now, because lots of people won't come out of schools or won't engage for anything that doesn't appear to have an immediate and pragmatic value for what they're currently doing. You'll get more people coming out for an event around the senior phase or the broad general education or something specific to the national exam than you might get coming out for a debate and a discussion. But that whole process of revising the nationals will actually have a minimal effect on the quality of education we deliver. Whereas the professional level, we have the personal conversation that we have, the possibility for engaging with people who are enthusiastic and passionate, think of the possibility for cultural change, and I think that's exactly what we need. I don't think that's a starry-eyed view either, because we've had a tremendous response to the Gate of Conversations that Linda Lees has been organising in Edinburgh, from teachers, from head teachers and others who've come out willingly over a series of six events to listen to artists, to listen to educational practitioners, to listen to thinkers in education, just a whole melange of different people and different approaches. And I think out of these, we've got possibilities, real possibilities, for pulling together a very different kind of Scottish Learning Festival, which celebrates all parts of Scotland and all aspects of the education that we offer.
Just got another question about one of the events that I attended, this Night of Dangerous Theatre, and it's still resonating with me. It was just so different, and somebody who's a very busy life outside of school, and I don't really get much time to see theatre. I remember days gone by going to the Citizens in Glasgow regularly, and the Arches indeed, where this event was held. We had the zombie choir that was following us around during the break, and fascinating finale to that, where the different elements of the choir were moving among the crowd and asking us all questions, very personal questions directed at us, and it was all ad-libbed. It was fascinating. And then the start of the night, where we ended up sitting next to a partner, and we had to negotiate, we had to hold hands with them, and we were seeing about how we negotiate that, or as educators, did we just launch in and hold hands quite comfortably? And then we had various activities to do, and the facilitator ended up by saying that I'd like you to hold hands for the next 30 minutes, and I've finished doing my bit, you know, and you could just have whatever conversation you wanted to have from then on in. And I found that a really kind of beautiful time to get to know somebody else and to talk through things that were very dear to us in education, sort of live long. as the night went on, it then got a little bit political, I suppose, when people, artists, etc., were starting to talk about their feelings with Curriculum for Excellence. And I was really struck, you know, people who are involved in ICT and education, we talk about gatekeepers a lot in terms of local authority staff and ICT, maybe centralised ICT staff in terms of access to YouTube and other websites, and these people as the gatekeepers and the poor teachers, so to speak, having to try and work around or negotiate. But for the first time ever, I heard fellow educators talking about teachers as gatekeepers, and aligned to that, referring to pupils as inmates. So many people in that room that night in the Arches referred to those metaphors. And did that surprise you, or is that something that you've come across through the festival and elsewhere in your work, David, where, you know, these are very, very strong metaphors that I think made me feel very uncomfortable as somebody who feels they just go in and do a decent job every day, and that it's not as politicised, and it's not as controlling as these people were painting. I don't know if it was just frustration about the lack of opportunities to have a meaningful contribution to the new curriculum.
Yeah, I mean, I think the inmates thing I found hard to deal with. And that wasn't a metaphor that I liked, nor one that I was particularly sympathetic to. Although, as with many of these things, you could see what it had given rise to it. The gatekeeper one, I think there's much more validity in. And I think one of the things I'm very conscious of just now is that there's lots of us that are too busy drowning to reach for the life belts. And I think we see lots of instances, classically, around creativity. We've got the Marks on the Landscape website, tremendous resource based around the Fife Earth Project. And I don't think it's used to anything like the extent that it might be. We had the National Theatre of Scotland offering to become involved with schools and communities in their Transform project. And that has energised a whole lot of schools who've been involved with it. Mike Gilmore at Woodmill High School in Dunfermline, very, very experienced head teacher, been around for a very long time. And Mike was positively glowing with enthusiasm when he talked about this. Now that, in my experience, isn't his natural state. So something powerful is happening around that. And yet, I think there are too many teachers who are saying, I don't have time to work this through. Now, I understand why that is, but it is that analogy that I started off with about drowning people being too busy to reach for the life belt. There are resources out there, there's support out there, there are ideas out there which could make us easier, but people are too pressured to be able to see that and take advantage of it. And in many, many occasions, I think the opportunities that are on offer are being turned away. And it's not that I'm being condemnatory around that. I understand the realities of being faced with all of the challenges of day-to-day teaching. But I think it would be worthwhile people just opening the gates a bit, taking time to see what's out there, and taking more opportunities to bring it in.
Hi, David, John again. That kind of reminded me, I think, of a word you used earlier on. I've written it down anyway, so I presume you used the word joy. You know, which links, obviously, sort of in a moderate state, to enjoy, but it was obviously an awful more powerful emotion. And it's almost like we're too busy to enjoy our teaching now. There's never enough time to get it in. I think is kind of what some of what you're driving at, is if we can get some joy both for the teachers and the learners back into the situation, it might help a wee bit.
Sorry,
it's okay. Yeah, go for it.
No, I mean, I absolutely agree with that, and you know, I think often, again, reflecting back on my own experience, and I don't think I'm romanticising it. I mean, often I thoroughly enjoyed and got real joy from working with youngsters in the early stages, first and second year, where you really explored ideas and really opened up possibilities in terms of methods and in terms of content and everything else. And then I tended to close it down because of the pressure that I felt to try and make sure that they got the best results they could possibly get in my subject. And also that as many youngsters got through and got the qualifications in my subject as possible, even though I was aware that a number of these young people wouldn't be able to take it anywhere beyond that stage, if you understand what I mean by that. You know, I would have youngsters that I would work really hard with to get their hires, knowing that they couldn't really cope with the subject at university level unless something dramatic happened around that. And joy was lost, and I think at times the joy was sacrificed for a prize that really wasn't worth getting. But it's the prize that everybody wants us to win, isn't it? You know, it's the prize that the local authorities are often interested in through the stacks data, through the school comparisons. It was certainly the starting data for inspections up until, I think, some elements of liberalisation around the inspection programme. But it does kill that joy for teachers. And the more we load the curriculum and the more prescriptive we make it, the more we drive out that possibility for exploration, curiosity, and yes, joy. Because when it's great in teaching, it's absolutely great. The days that you have are good days, are the best days. They are just fantastic. And the moments that you have in classrooms where the penny drops with youngsters and you really achieve what you've set out to achieve, and you can see them grow and blossom beyond any opportunities you feel you've opened up to them, they're really the big, big hits, aren't they? And I think we're putting too many of our teachers at ease.
Well, I think it seems an awful lot harder some days to enjoy yourself. And I certainly, although I left the classroom just before Curriculum for Excellence hit, I could feel just as the 5 to 14, for instance, got more and more implemented and there was more boxes to tick, you couldn't, on a snowy day, you didn't have the same opportunity just to build an igloo instead of doing maths. And I think sometimes these sort of things, serendipitous learning opportunities, are the ones that can really bring things together. And sometimes they come from the environment, but I think often they come from the learners themselves. And maybe
absolutely
design some of the curriculum would be an idea. At the moment, I'm sort of dropping in on a sort of university undergraduate course in the States, sort of open online one, and one of the features of it is that as part of the course, students are encouraged to, and I think the ones that are actually taking the course for a qualification, it's part of their course marks, is they've got to create assignments for the course. And that obviously leads, and they've also got to create tutorials for other assignments. Some of the assignments the instructors present are very vague, and then they leave it up then to the participants to sort of learn how to do them and then teach each other, sort of thing. And I think that can bring certainly a certain amount of silliness and enjoyment into the process, but also it's quite a powerful way to learn.
And it brings me to the question, John, was where were you last week when we were having the Festival of Dangerous Ideas?
I was visiting my mum.
Well, that may be the most dangerous idea you've had this week.
Tuesday nights is mum night, so.
So of course, John, you were at the Google event that David was also heavily involved in. David, is there anything that kind of jumped across there? Within the same week with the Google event in Glasgow, the Festival of Dangerous Ideas, Edinburgh, Glasgow, and elsewhere. So, obviously, the Google event was heavily tech focused and obviously associated pedagogies and other gogies. But did your thinking tie in at all across the two events?
Yes, I did, and I'm really pleased you've raised that, David. I thought the Google event was absolutely amazing in a whole number of ways. One of the things that I was said about it was that coming together between a massive corporate and this incredible group of educational guerrillas with a UE. And I loved that whole idea of that really powerful synergy. You know, Google, I may well be involved in that for all sorts of reasons, commercial, idealistic, whatever. I don't know, but certainly on the day, they became caught up in a phenomenal groundswell from a lot of really, really talented practitioners. And you talked about the tech bias, and yes, there was a tech bias, but it was a contextual bias. Ollie Bray introduced the day. He talked about learning. He illustrated it through ideas about space and comments about technology, but he talked about learning, he talked about young people, he talked about the outcomes that we could bring, he talked about building from the possible, and he didn't ever get bogged down in a discussion around the technology. It was never sterile. There were people there whom I just admire completely. I sat in on Ian Stewart's workshop, and he gave people the opportunity to ask questions, as one does, but everyone who asked the question got something from him that was tangible, helpful, and supportive, and practical. I sat in also on David Gilmore from East Lothian's workshop, and again, I was just completely blown away by the fact that he and others in East Lothian had managed to create a system which actually worked at whole authority level and reached down into schools and actually benefited learner. And that was really consistent with other things that I saw, observed, and was part of in the course of the day. I just thought that the contribution that people were making to that day, Charlie loves stuff. I mean, you know, we've got Glow, whatever one thinks of it. Charlie Love's gone away and built a comparable system in his shed, I think, and he's put together something that's a really viable alternative or supplement or whatever to Glow, and that really excited me. And these were teachers who found joy in what they did. These are people who blog, who write creatively about their work, who demonstrate their enthusiasm, and that, for me, bled right across into the Festival of Dangerous Ideas, a wonderful springboard for it.
Yeah, hi David. Yeah, I mean, I was at the Google event myself and thought it was a great day, and the next step, there's a couple of things I thought were interesting about it. One was, I think at the Scott, EduScot ICT events, I felt Google came in quite heavy and heavy-handed. But I thought on the Saturday, a couple of weeks ago, at the Google Scotland event, it was a very light touch from Google. They just sort of enabled things. Yeah. Everybody that was talking was a practitioner, either in the classroom or, like David Gilmore, a practitioner in magically managing a great educational network. I thought that was the exciting bit about it, was that it was very much handed over to the practitioners.
Absolutely, and again, I think lots of lessons. I mean, at the risk of putting livelihood at risk here, you know, that's where we need to go. I think the challenges we face are too complex to be met through conformist and conventional thinking. But equally, the challenges that we face will not be resolved by single voices. They'll be resolved by choruses. And our best hope for handling the complexity and change that we face right now is through collaboration. And that's exactly what you saw on that Google Saturday, which you saw people willing collaborating with others, and to be honest with you, I just find the whole experience humbling and quite inspirational.
Yeah, I think Charlie Love's example of it's maybe giving more than an awful lot of people, but what he's developing does exactly what you're talking about. It's for collaboration, but it also is so flexible, so just he can change things so rapidly. That's what we need. everything in the world's changing, but IT is probably changing just slightly faster than that. And that's, we really need that for our young folks.
And that's, you know, that again, that's the point, I think. As you say, there are things that are changing very rapidly, technology being the most notable example. But our understanding of learning, our understanding of neuroscience, there's a whole range of areas where things are moving very quickly. Globalization, obviously, everybody talks about that whole idea of massive change. But it does mean that the status quo no longer exists. The status quo becomes outdated at the moment from which it's defined now. And that means, I think, we need to be much more open, much more flexible. But the great thing about a lot of these people who were involved in the Google event, a lot of the teachers who've been involved in the creative conversations and the Festival of Dangerous Ideas, is that they adhere to a set of values, actually very traditional and very old. They are people who recognise the importance of learning, they recognise the importance of relationships. They might be trying to enhance all of these things through the use of technology, but that's not their core business. And that, I think, is where the Festival of Dangerous Ideas needs to take us. It needs to take us to that point where we work forward from real principles, real values, and we augment that with flexible thinking and a willingness to change, amend, and respond the way that we do things. The why, I think, we need to adhere to, but we need to get some much more dangerous thinking around the house.
I think
we're just coming into the, I'm just going to say, John, we're maybe coming into the last few minutes, and sure you'd like to come in with another point for David. Just before you do, though, I'll say that if you want to just come in with a comment or question for David before we wrap up, then the email address is edgytalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, you can use the hashtag edgytalk. John.
I actually didn't have a question. I just thought that was a fantastic sort of soundbite to end with. That's great. It just summed everything up there and told us our next steps, David. So from me, certainly, thanks very much.
And David, what are your next steps then, or what can you say, I suppose, in relation to Festival of Dangerous Ideas? You've kind of alluded to some ideas for next year's event. You're talking about meeting with the curator, Karen, shortly. But I suppose not only in terms of your vision for the future, but also in relation to, you know, is it all about organic developments now for those who attended the events, you know, that we would never hear of again until somebody tells us on Twitter that they were inspired, you know, in two or three years' time? Or is there anything kind of organised? Is there any way, you know, kind of in your mind about how the festival might live between or during the other 11 and three quarter months?
Well, I do hope that will be the case, David. I mean, I think, as usual with these events, and not that it was a usual event, so I don't even know why I said that, but a lot of it is about starting to build the contacts and build the relationships.
Yeah.
The people that I will now engage with, I wouldn't have engaged with before. I do think that there are a number of really healthy signs that we're going to get much more of that. I hate the phrase bottom up, but it's the best I can come up with at the moment. Approaches to change. I think we've seen real strides with the work that you do. I mean, again, people like yourselves, people like Jay Helbert and Matthew Boyle and their colleague who do the Inside Learning podcast, the whole pedagogy movement. I think that whole approach really offers prospects of energizing the profession and energizing what we do. I think if we can create more opportunities through things like the Festival of Dangerous Ideas, and we will do it and we will keep doing it, I think we can shift the axis of the possible. I think people are going to look at the success that the festival had on limited resources, limited people resources as much as financial ones, and yet it managed to create conversations right across Scotland. And I would hope that we'll see that reflected in what we do for the Learning Festival next year. I would hope it'll become much more part of the kind of discourses that we have. I just think that what you're doing out there is hugely powerful, and we do need to encourage it and build on it much more and get that organic development. But when we get the organic development, let's capture it and let's harvest it and let's translate it into really meaningful change in classrooms, because I think some of our young people desperately need it.
Well, well, thanks very much, David. The second powerful ending I think you've given there. So that was two for the price of one. Just paint a picture of fantastic possibilities. Can I just say from David and myself, thanks very much for giving up the time. I suspect we'll have a few questions that will pop over Twitter in the next wee while. And you're at Real David Cameron, I believe.
Real D Cameron on Twitter. I'm realdave.cameron on Skype.
Skype. Right, so people can get in touch with you, or they can do the usual tweeting to EduTalk, or they can email EduTalkR, EduTalkR at hotmail.co.uk. And thanks for listening, folks, whether you're listening live or you're listening later on to the archive. I hope to have that up as soon as possible. And if you're not getting to end of term stir crazy, next week we've got Kenneth Muir, who's a Chief Inspector at Education Scotland, talking about the inspection process. So it'll be interesting to see how that ties in with David's view that the inspection process is changing at the moment. Okay, so good night, folks, and thanks for listening.